The last thing that I said, that I would just like to clarify, elaborate on a little bit more, and we didn't have time, was that sometimes there are fairly obvious things that could be deal breakers. Appearance, height. I mean, either she is 4'10", or 6'3", or she's not. You can see the height. Now, whether it bothers you or not might be something that takes a little time. But as I said, it's not fair to go out 6 or 7 times and then say, well, she's too tall or too short, or he's too tall or too short. Because that's something that you should have determined internally beforehand. And the same applies to physical attraction. Again, you may need to give it some time. Here's the question. What happens if you're still in doubt and you know the facts, but how you're internally processing these facts is taking you longer than it really should? And you don't want to be unfair to the girl you're seeing. We can have a parallel of this, which is commonly happens. You admire this person very much. You see a lot of great qualities. But the emotional component, the lev, has not sufficiently developed, commensurately developed. You'd expect that by this time you should like her more. You should feel a little bit more for her. And from your perspective, you'd really like to continue and see whether or not this can develop more. On the other hand, the legitimate fear you have is that from her perspective, you're continuing on. She thinks this is progressing beautifully. She's already planning the color scheme of her wedding, and you still have some real misgivings about this, and you want the time to be able to, you're not in the same wavelength. So at this point, people come and they say, we can do one of two things. Either I can just keep on going, I don't think it's fair. Therefore, I'd rather drop the shidduch, because I don't want to mislead this girl. And there is an alternative that works very, very well, that sometimes even the shatran, unless they're very experienced, may not be aware of. But this is something that you can suggest. You can suggest to the shatran to tell the girl that you have some doubts. And from your perspective, you don't want to be misleading to her and unfair. And although you would like to continue going out, you don't want to do it on the premise that you're going to mislead her. And therefore, you leave it to the girl's choice as to whether she's willing to continue going out with you despite the fact that you may have some misgivings. And sometimes you can voice them pretty straightforwardly. You can say, you know what? I happen to admire her very much. I like a lot of qualities, which is why I'd like to continue going out. The problem is that my emotions have not sufficiently developed. I don't know why Epi is here. He gets a great big mazel tov. Actually, I think that Epi should come up here and tell us how he did it, you know? He's the most recent man of experience. Could you ask the people learning in the next room to move out? Okay. So, again, the point is, if you relay the information to the through the shotgun to the girl, that there are some misgivings, and maybe as a sensitivity to her, maybe you wouldn't really continue. Give her the choice. This way, already you're not misleading, and in case it doesn't pan out, you haven't been remiss. I also last week mentioned that when we talked about not seeing two girls concurrently. And we talked about the ills and the problems therein. I said, one almost never does. And I believe that I said I would elaborate on this, and I didn't. So I just want to talk about the almost, the exceptions to this rule. And it's good to seek advice when the situation comes up. But situation one is, if you're living in a place where there aren't very many opportunities, and you can only travel, you travel to another city where there are more girls available, and you can only be there for 10 days. Then, even though it's not the ideal, but you don't really have many options and to do otherwise. And then, if the shatran or the various people you're speaking to says, well, we have three possibilities for you to see during these 10 days. It probably makes sense to see all three girls during this 10-day period. Clearly, it wouldn't be smart to continue seeing them, to continue the relationship simultaneously. But at least initially, to be able to get in the door and see whether or not there is anything, since you live in California and the girls are in New York and you're here only for 10 days and there are opportunities of seeing three people, you really don't have much choice other than to see all three people. Is it wise to tell the girls that you're seeing other people? No. Should you hide the fact? If you're asked, of course you tell the truth. But it's not wise to inform them, I don't think. But on the other hand, once you start getting with second and third dates, that's when you have to make choices of which you're going to pursue, you're going to continue. Now let's move on. Often, you may have some difficulty with the shatran. The shatran is trying to talk you into something. You're pretty sure that that you're right. You don't want to continue seeing this girl. And the shatran is telling you how good it is for you and what a terrible mistake you're making. Now, the shatran is not necessarily the best advisor for you. In many cases, the shatran doesn't know you extremely well. In many cases, the shatran might be somewhat biased, whether the shatran is in it for a parnasa and they're making some money, or the shatran is in it simply for the good feeling of being able to do the mitzvah. But nevertheless, even doing a mitzvah can be a negiyah, a bias and a prejudice, and therefore, and there could be a variety of other biases, and therefore a shatran often cannot really be objective. And I say this tongue-in-cheek, because sometimes there are shatranim that are really, really very good. They're very experienced. They get a sense of who people are very quickly. And sometimes they can point things out to you that you may yourself not even be sure of. But the best barometer of whether or not to accept advice from the shatran has to be your shidduch mentor. Your Rebbe, or the person advising you, who knows you best, to whom you can then bring this information and say, this is what the shatran is telling me. Do you think there is value in this? Do you think this is correct? Of course, you trust your own instincts as well. But the bottom line is that sometimes you can come into a conflict of what to do between your opinion and the shatran. And the shatran may want to convince you to see this girl or to see this girl again, and you are convinced and you've corroborated it with your mentor that it's not in your best interest to do so. So, rule of thumb, don't get into fights with shatranim. That's not good for your reputation, and sometimes shatranim speak amongst themselves. Again, they mean really l'toelos, but they can get the wrong impression. He's a stubborn guy, he's a this, he's a that. However, a Rebbe of mine once suggested that when you disagree with the shatran, and the shatran is really trying to almost twist your arm into something, sometimes it's a good idea to make a self-deprecating joke and say, you know what, I guess you like me, you want me to see this girl because you see some milas and you see some of my advantages and milas and good points. Well, I have to tell you about a chisaron in myself. A fault of mine is that I happen to be a very stubborn person. And when I get fixated on something, I just don't change my mind. And you have to accept me with my milas and chisaronis. And you sort of semi-jokingly chalk it up to your stubbornness, and that's why you can't do what the shatran says. But you can tell the shatran, you know what, you're right. But I have a problem. I'm a very stubborn person. Okay. Now she knows or he knows that you don't really mean what you say, but nevertheless, if you just keep on saying the same thing like a broken record, you often get your point across without a fight. Question often comes up, what should I reveal in terms of a personal fault, a personal issue, a background issue, a chisaron, a family issue, a health issue? What types of things are my responsibility and obligation to reveal and what are not? And the rule of thumb is that anything that's continually relevant is something, or possibly relevant in the future, is something that needs to be brought up. Something that is passé and just not relevant anymore is not something that really needs to be brought up. An example. Let's say somebody 10 years ago had had insomnia. Couldn't sleep at nights. He was all tense. And it really disrupted his life pattern. He went to a therapist for 8 months or whatever and worked on some things, identified some things where he was a little bit maladjusted or not coping well with life. He worked very hard, overcame these things, became quite well-adjusted. His sleeping pattern improved. Now he's the calm, collected guy. It's just not nogea. It's not relevant. Is this something that is obligatory to go and bring up and tell this girl? I want you to know that once I was maladjusted, and then I went to a therapist, then I got all fixed. And if you want to say it, you can say it. If you want to be very open, you have the kind of relationship, there's nothing necessarily wrong with bringing it up. But is this the kind of thing that needs to be raised? The answer is no. However, if it's an issue that existed in the past and very likely will crop up in the future, and I'm still coping with it at times, then there's an absolute necessity for me to bring it up. If it's anything that could possibly be a deal breaker, even if it's something that this girl would never discover on her own until it's too late, I'm mechuyav al pi halacha to raise the issue to her and bring it on, put it on the table. Now the question is, how do I put it on the table? What's the best way to present something like this, and when? Well, Gedolei Yisrael have generally recommended that when there is a potential deal breaker, there's something in your past, in your history, in your present, that if this girl were to know, would probably not even see you. You're not obligated to say it up front. Sometimes if it's the kind of thing that really could easily be discovered, it's not smart to hide it. For example, you've been married 5 times. Come to a new place, and they don't know you. Would it be wise not to make any mention of the fact that we married before? No, because one telephone call to somebody who knows you, they're going to find out that you've been married 5 times. So that's already silly. But if it's something relatively hidden, then, as I said, you're a mechuyev to bring it up. But Gedolei Yisrael said you don't have to say this up front. You don't necessarily have to say this to a shatran. And the fine details of what yes and what no, we advise to discuss with an experienced mentor, a Rebbe. When you do bring it up, when is that? So Gedolei Yisrael have said the following. Although you don't have to bring it up front, it's not fair to present it when the girl is gone on you. She's daft. Her heart has already been given to you, and for all practical purposes, she has decided to marry you. So if you're really coming down the home stretch in a relationship, and then the last minute you spring on her, something could be a deal breaker, that, as we say in Hebrew, in Israel, zeh lo fair. Okay? That's not fair. For one of two reasons. First of all, you've been manipulative because you waited until you basically hooked her, and then when you had her heart, then you tell her something. That's not fair. And in fact, it can break a heart. So one of two things happens. Either she will accept the problem even though her better judgment tells her that she shouldn't, just because she's so emotionally attached already, or there'll be a major blow-up and you have terribly hurt her feelings. That's the other flip side that's not fair. You can't hide it, nor may you wait until it's too late. And therefore, the Gedolei Yisrael generally recommend when we're at the transitional state from the initial exploration for you to be able to get your foot in the door, for her to be able to see some of your qualities and see who you are, and we're now just beginning to become a little bit more serious, usually described as the third date or fourth date. It doesn't always necessarily mean chronologically the third date. Sometimes a first date can be a total disaster or a wipeout. But it means that whatever one should normally accomplish by the end of a third date, or possibly a fourth date, around that time, that's when you need to say whatever it is that you have to say. Now the question is, how do you say it? I have a mesara from a Rebbe of mine, very, very wise man, who suggested that when there's something that might be a potential deal breaker, there is a way to present it in the best possible light with the with the best success rate. And that is not, and here's the concept. If you sit a girl down and say, are you sitting? Are you holding on? I have something very, very serious to discuss with you. Then you can tell her that you have a piece of skin on your back that's missing a quarter of an inch of hair, and she probably will not marry you. Okay? no matter what the chesaron is, you know, I have a pimple on a toe. She's not going to marry you. Why? Because you scared her off. And therefore, the concept here is not to sit her down seriously, but to weave the issue in naturally and almost nonchalantly into a conversation, not to lie about it, to present it, but try to present it in a way that you fully expect that she's not going to make an issue of it. And there are intelligent ways of doing this. It may be a family issue. Maybe there's possibly an illness with a parent that might have some impact. So you get her to talk about her parents, and then you say, well, of course, that doesn't really apply to my mother because often she's whatever it is. And then she might ask you some more questions. So you reveal the information, but the mode and method, the climate in which you reveal it, should be one in which you sort of naturally expect that it's going to be accepted. And then any question she has, by all means, you deal with it. So that's the best, and that's the presenting a problematic issue in the best possible way. You may also want to do some role-playing with somebody else, your best friend, your roommate, your Rebbe, about how a conversation might go. And I must say, I'll just share probably the worst situation, although I can't give any details whatsoever, but somebody did some studying here who had maybe the most problematic history of anyone ever, and was even a big, he was here on a per diem basis. If a problem should erupt, then we were going to address it, and he had a fabulously successful year here before he moved on. And when it came to Shidduchim, I role-played with him in terms of how this should present it, and whenever it came that close, it happened, I think, two times, that he got into that far into a shidduch, when he presented the reality of his past, it was a deal-breaker, and the girl was not able to make it. But finally, when the third situation like that came around, he did present it, and it was accepted beautifully. So they finally came to my office, and I wanted to meet both of them. The girl was a very, very well-educated and brilliant young woman. And I asked the young man, I said, have you discussed your issues with this girl? So they both nodded. So I asked her, well, how do you feel? So she said, I'll tell you the truth. I have so much baggage, personal history of myself, that I was terribly afraid of what I would say to him. The more he unloaded to me, the more delighted I became that he would be able to accept my stuff, which is very different than his stuff. And once he unloaded to me, I unloaded to him. And all I can say is it's a fabulous marriage, and they're doing beautifully, and it's gewaltig. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to put these these two people together. Good idea in the world of Balei Teshuvah to take a girl to Rebbeim and to friends. Let's talk about, so to speak, a dating process. It is a good idea generally, the first two dates, and again, this is not a script, but this is like general advice. It's a good idea, the first two or three dates, to have very few distractions, if any. It's basically, I mean, if you could sit in a room with nothing else in it, just you and this girl, or in a lounge, and just talk, that's ideal, because you want to see whether or not you can really interact with her. After a while, though, it's a good idea to be able to see her in different and varying circumstances, and for her to see you. So it's a good idea to vary what it is that you're doing, whether you go to the zoo or an aquarium or a museum or take walks, but just do lots of different things where you can have an opportunity of seeing how she interacts with other people in other circumstances. And the same is true for taking her, once the relationship becomes more serious, to Rebbeim, not necessarily for such a formal visit, although that's well qualified too, somewhere later down the line, but for a Shabbos meal. In the FFB world, this is not done. In the FFB world, the dating is done so bitsniestick, maybe for social reasons, that you don't want anybody in the world to know about this until you're already engaged. In the world of Balei Teshuvah, people are more nonchalant about this, and that's okay. Because we'd like to have the opinions of the family that I go to every Shabbos and have them see how we interact. A couple that thought that they were seriously dating came to my house for a Shabbos meal. And when they left, one of my daughters said to me, "That's not much of a shidduch." So I said, "Why not?" So she said, "Well, throughout the entire meal, I observed that they never shared any conversation with each other. They didn't look at each other during the meal. That is not going anywhere." And sure enough, within the next few days, the guy came to me and there were certain problems and they talk and broke up. But getting the observation, the two of them were somewhat confused, but it was very clear to one of my daughters that this wasn't going anywhere. And she was right on the mark. So getting the input of people who are on the outside, who know you, can often be extremely valuable and helpful so as to make fewer mistakes. Another thing, while dating, topics of conversation. We talked a little bit about this in the past, but there's one thing that I believe I didn't, correct me if I'm wrong. Sometimes people talk about abstract things. They talk about hashkafa. They talk about views and things and philosophies and all kinds of stuff, but not necessarily very much about myself and about yourself. Relationships never go anywhere when we're still emotionally and personally detached from each other. And I had a most dramatic shidduch system situation where the two people were seeing each other for quite a while and it was plateauing and nothing was happening. And a very well-known shadchan suggested that when he asked what their topics of conversation were, they weren't really opening up and talking personally about themselves. And then, within a couple of days, they got engaged. A week later, they got engaged, and I was shocked. Okay, because I guess the pieces were there, but that component was missing. That's a very important message to talk about yourselves. Another thing. Frequently, as a dating relationship continues to develop, people start musing and they fall into the trap of talking about us as though we'd be married. We talk about, well, where do you think we're going to live? What kind of furniture are we going to be getting? And start talking as though it's a foregone conclusion. There's an assumption that we are a couple. The danger in that is that we can no longer examine the relationship. We can no longer look at you and me and how we interact together from the cerebral perspective of, is this a healthy thing or not? The moment we're talking about where we're going to live, we're not dating anymore. At that point, we're talking as though we're an engaged couple. And anything we do from there on is probably pretty much spinning our wheels in futility. Which ties into the next issue, the length of dating. We alluded earlier to the fact that in the FFB world, because of all the assumptions that are often rightfully made about background and so on, so it's merely a question of checking out a couple of things and fine-tuning, and whether or not people, chemistry is there, attraction is there, basic hashkafas are there, good midos, usually 5 to 10 dates that can happen. In the world of most Balei Teshuva, all these assumptions don't exist. And therefore, we really need to start from scratch, and we need to develop a relationship. One of the most remarkable experiences I had when I was relatively newly married had to do with a mission that I was sent on to go to a Gadol B'Yisrael, the Kapishnitzer Rebbe, the then Kapishnitzer Rebbe, the son of the old famous one who was the contemporary of Rav Aaron Kotler, and the son of Rav Moshe, was perhaps the greatest Baal Chesed in all of Brooklyn. And I and another young man went to him, and he gave us a half-hour slot, but he didn't tell us that all the telephone calls he'd receive in the half-hour slot are subtracted from our time. So we ended up talking to him all together for about 10 minutes out of the half hour. And he couldn't help us at all with the mission we went. And I was wondering why in the world we went, but there was one conversation that took place there that has then been transmitted to thousands of people, and this is just another mode of this transmission. And the call came in as follows. One of his balabatim returned his call, And he says, yeah, Rabbi Yankel, and this is a Hasidish Rebbe with the Hasidish Rebbe's cane, silver tipped on it with the velvet, the whole 9 yards and trappings of a Hasidish Rebbe. And he's talking Yiddish, so the Balabasar returns his call and he says, yes, Rabbi Yankel, I'm speaking to Shedach. You're a daughter with the son of Avram, who davens in the other corner of the Beis Medrash. He has a wonderful son, and he introduces the Shedach. And he says, however, I have one condition. He says, to explain the condition, I have to tell a story of my father, Zechat Tzadik, Zichus Yuga Nalaini, may his merit be his chus for us, my father, the Kabishnitz Rebbe. He said, my father received a telegram from a grandson in Eretz Yisrael, who was studying in yeshiva, who was involved in a Shedach, and the telegram came, Ani Muchan. I'm ready. I'm ready to close the deal on a Shidduch. I just want grandfatherly, Rebbish approval. So he says, my father, when he got the telegram, said, he started fuming. And he says, how many times did he go out? Once or twice? He said, what does he think this is? A pre-World War II shtetl where everybody knew everything about everybody else? It's just a question of a meeting or two? He says, medav ha-reiskein, nachamol, in nachamol, in nachamol, in nachamol. He says, my father said one has to go out again and again and again and again. End quote, my father. Said Rav Meishel now to this man. He says, Rabbi Yankala, I'm telling you, I'm quoting my father. I don't want any Hasidish Amas. This is the Hasidish Rebbe talking. I don't want any Hasidish Amas over here. No Hasidish stories over here. He says, my condition is that they have to go out again and again and again and again. And if not, I'm not the Shatran. And he says, nobody knows better than myself the problems that come when people don't have a good understanding of each other and don't develop a relationship with each other. Now here was a Hasidish Rebbe talking to two semi, at least semi Hasidish Balabatim, the davened in his shul, and he was saying they have to go out again and again and again. And that's what I walked away from, that little story. And all I can say is Kal v'chomer ben b'noishel Kal v'chomer. It's all the more so when you don't have 90% of those assumptions that could have been made within that close social circle and cultural circle of the Kapishnitzer Rebbe's shtiebel, one really needs to go out again and again. So, I want to share an incident or two that occurred. A bachur in this yeshiva came to me. Before I tell the story, let me talk about just one of the advantages of going out for a period of time. The shidduch system has its drawbacks, and the key drawback is that everybody's dressed up on their best behavior, doing artificial things, and we'll talk about getting past some of that artificiality. So how are you really going to see very much about the other person? Now the longer you get to know her, and the more comfortable you are with each other, the more you can both, so to speak, let your hair down and be more honest and yourselves and see each other in even trying circumstances and get a better realistic glimpse into who the other person is. And then you have more of a basis in which to make a decision. A couple came to me not too long ago, within the past couple of years, and Talmud of the yeshiva, and he says, we're unofficially engaged. I say, wonderful. Tell me, how long do you know each other? 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks. So I said, I think, and both of them were Balei Teshuva, and I said, I think that's entirely too short for you to have been able to properly process what you've done. And therefore, my strong recommendation is pull back from your unofficial engagement, make believe it never happened. Start detaching a little bit and examine this relationship once again. There's no personal benefit I get from this other than helping you to do a better job. So they agreed, and they waited another full month before they got engaged. Soon as they got engaged, the guy comes to me. There's some serious problems with this girl, with the relationship, and so on. And as we examined it, there were some serious problems. So I said, tell me, I have a kasha. You went out with this girl for 2 months. You never saw any of this. So he says, Rabbi, I really went out only for 3.5 weeks, which is what I suspected. He said, when we walked out of your office, we said, look, we know we're going to get married, but we can't defy Rabbi Braun, right? That's not covered, right? So therefore, let's keep ourselves unofficially engaged for a month, and then we'll get engaged. He says, so I kept on seeing her, but I didn't look. I didn't examine at all. Neither of us did. Once we got engaged, we started working together, and now all of a sudden, the problems erupted. And you know what? The end result there was, they had to break their engagement. I don't know for a fact, because I'm not a Navi, but I suspect that there's an excellent chance that had they not gotten engaged after 3.5 or to 4 weeks, and they would have actually examined it for a full 2 months, they may never have gotten engaged. And dozens and dozens and dozens of people have repeated to me, I wish I didn't rush the dating process. People who were engaged and then had difficulties with during their engagement, many of whom broke off, have said, I wish I didn't rush the dating process. Somehow or another, we have things somewhat upside down. There seems to be an external, and sometimes the shatran is the one pushing. Just send that shatran to me. Sometimes it's the shatran, sometimes it's an internal sense. There's nothing else to talk about. We know everything about each other. Boy, is he wrong. And we rush the examination process. I usually say the following, and this is, I think, a very good way to look at it. Imagine if somebody comes to you and says, we're about to build a 50-story building. You are going to be personally responsible for life for the maintenance and upkeep of this building. However, since we haven't built the building yet, you have the right to choose which contractors and to make choices and input along the way. Now, when you have to build the foundation and a couple of people come off the street and say, you know, we know how to pour concrete, are you going to hire them? No. You're going to take a professional company of masons and you're going to get references on them and make sure that they do very good work. Once they've built the foundation, before you start moving on, you're going to call in the structural engineer. And before you call in the structural engineer, you're going to take a pad and paper, a clipboard, and you're going to examine every square inch of that foundation. Any hairline crack or any area that seems to be higher than, or anything that looks a little bit abnormal or possibly problematic, you're going to jot down its location and mark it. And when the structural engineer comes and you're going to do a walkthrough with him, you're going to say, is this a problem? Is that a problem? Is that a problem? And then hope that he or she will be able to help you decide how to move on to the next step. The dating process is examining the relationship. And that's where the critical time is to look closely for cracks, for fissures, for problems, because everything that gets built on top of that is going to be built on the foundation of your dating process. And people often have a tendency to sort of bypass critical steps and rush through the dating process. And rather, when you're engaged, as Gedolei Yisrael say, at that point, try to get married as quickly as you can. That's when sometimes people prolong the time of engagement and often have a difficult time of it. So, a Talmud of ours comes over to me, and this is someone who had a hard time dealing with stress. A wonderful guy, but difficult time coping with stress. And I had always advised him, and Rebbeim that were working with him, that this is in particular somebody who really needs a longer period of time in examining a relationship. And he comes over to me Shabbos morning before davening. Rabbi Braun, I want to be called up. Hechassan, I just got engaged. I said, excuse me, how long do you know this young woman? He says, a month. I said, is there any way that you could back off and slow down on this? And he became terribly offended. He wanted me to give him a big hug. What do you mean you became a chassan? We'll call you up a chassan. And as a result of his offense or feeling offended, he didn't share anything with me that was going on during his engagement until 4 days before the wedding. And he comes to me for a Shabbos meal 4 days before the wedding, and he opens up and tells me horror stories. Now, had this been 2 weeks prior, I would have had the guts to say, I think the wedding should be postponed. I think the two of you need to go into counseling and see, work through the issues and see whether or not you should get married. But 4 days before the wedding, and the wedding was thousands of miles away, and I wasn't even going, and I wasn't the Masada Kedushin, and I told him that had this been 2 weeks earlier, I'd recommend counseling. The fact that it's now at this point, I can't make this recommendation. What I can say is that I think proactively as soon as your Sheva Brachas are over, and maybe even sooner, the two of you should start going into marriage counseling. Well, P.S., that marriage ended in disaster. And again, I'm not a Novi, but I believe had they dated for 3 months, I doubt highly if they ever would have gotten engaged. So the there are many things, problems that can be avoided by being thorough and looking at a relationship in depth and over a period of time. As the Ibn Ezra is quoted having said, "Mashalo ya'aseh ha-seichel, ya'aseh ha-zman." What wisdom can't figure out, the passage of time and life experience will do. I spoke of the artificiality of dating. Here's the question. You go to a girl's home, meet the parents, possibly, pick up the girl, take her to a hotel lounge, you sit there prettily, maybe you buy a drink, soda of course, and sit there for a couple of hours, you drive her home. Question is this, after you're married, how often are you going to get dressed in Shabbos best during the weekdays, take your wife to a hotel lounge, sit there for 3 hours, and just chat over some soda? The answer is never. Well, I won't say never, but it's highly unlikely that you're going to do that. A disaster of a date last night. Disaster. I said, what happened? He says, I picked up this girl. We're in the car. We're driving to a hotel. And it's supposed to be 20 minutes away. And it was pouring cats and dogs. I got hopelessly lost. I went out 15 times to ask for directions because I had to. And it took us 2 hours and 20 minutes to get to this hotel. When we parked, it was summertime, and there was no parking available right near the entrance. We both had umbrellas, so we parked a distance away, opened up our umbrellas, and the wind was whipping the rain sideways, horizontally. By the time we got into the lobby of the hotel, we were so wet, it was as though, with our clothes on, we had been in the shower. Dripping. Sorry. And people are looking at us, and we walk in there, and we don't know where to go. We're not going to mess up the nice furniture there. We finally find some vinyl Naugahyde stuff. We sit down over there. It's summertime. The air conditioning is blowing furiously. And in 10 minutes, I see the girl is shaking violently. So I had no choice. We couldn't stay there. So we got back, left the lobby, went back into the car. This time it only took us 40 minutes to get home. I said, it was a disaster. And I said, now I consider that a fabulous date. Fabulous date. Why? Because in real life, how often does it happen that things don't go right? Frequently. I don't want to say most of the time, but very often things don't go the way you plan them. Okay? And nevertheless, you still have your wife, right? So I think you got a chance to see her, and she got a chance to see you when things didn't go quite so well. They tell the story of the guy who's on a date, and he comes to a red light, and as he stopped for the red light, the girl turns off the ignition and pulls out the key. Famous story. And as the light turns green, the cars behind him start honking and honking and honking, and he says, what, why don't you give me back the key? She says, not so fast. He says, give me back the key, put it back in. Finally, she puts it back in, and he gets off, and he starts driving, and he says, what was that all about? She says, well, I was told to test you to see how you would react in a trying circumstance. So he says, well, how did I do? So she says, you did very well. He says, well, but you failed. Okay? So you can't artificially orchestrate problems. And you shouldn't try to make problems. But if you're in a situation that's somewhat unusual and problematic, I spoke a shidduch once to a bachur, an alumnus of the yeshiva who was learning in the yeshiva, Gedola. And he didn't have a car. He had to go with public transportation. It took him a couple of hours to get to this girl's house. He comes to the girl's house, and as he arrives, an emergency telephone call comes in. And apparently an older brother of this girl had a medical emergency. He mistakenly put his arm through a pane of glass. There's a storm door, and it broke. He hit the door or something, and he got a very bad gash, and it cut a vein, and it was a holiday, Memorial Day weekend. You couldn't get doctors. Well, this girl got on the phone. She was the only one home with her parents. And she got on the phone. They sat him down. They gave him something to eat, and they apologized for the emergency. And she called Hatzalah, and she called Bikur Cholim, and she called medical. And make a long story short, he sat in the dining room for about 2 hours. And she orchestrated a whole series of events of having him, of arranging for a vascular surgeon to come to an excellent hospital and having her brother transported from Lakewood to Manhattan. And this whole process took several hours, and the father took the young man to Mincha with him, and they kept on offering him more tea and so on, and came out every 5 minutes to apologize, but they're waiting for a call back from the doctor. And he ended up, at the very end, sitting with her in a room off to the side for a half an hour, and that was it. And he called me up and he said, I want you to know something. I learned more about this girl without the traditional date than I possibly could have in 3 or 4 dates. I saw the family interaction. I saw how she acted. I saw her capabilities. I saw how she acted, how apologetic the family was to me. I saw a lot of midos. I saw I saw qualities. There's a lot of stuff that I observed because I saw a real life, difficult and emergency situation. So again, we don't create emergencies, but if you just go out in this very artificial, hunky-dory type of orchestrated dating, then you could be missing out on a lot of important things that are really there. Another question. What if a shatran suggests a girl that you've seen in the past? And you or she said no. The shidduch didn't work in the past. But that might have been a year ago, might even have been 2 years ago or more. Should one reconsider going out with somebody that you've already tried and it hasn't worked? Well, the answer is yes. I think one should always be open to re-examining. There are times when I might have made a mistake, she might have made a mistake. The time may not have been right. I might not have been really ready for her then. One of the most remarkable stories I ever heard was from the shomer of a very well-known Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Shlomo Freifeld, who founded the Yeshiva Shar Yashiv in Far Rockaway. And the shomer of Reb Freifeld told me that on the day of the wedding, he confided to his shomer the following. He said, I've been looking for a shidduch for many years. And sometimes it was very trying, very big nisayon. And I sometimes wondered if there's anything wrong with me. There was a nisayon in bitachon and so on. Today, I have the answer to my question. And I understand better. My kala is only 17 years old. So when I started looking for a shidduch, she was all of 10 or 12 years old. So she wasn't available and ready for me at that time. So I had to look around until I found the right one. And under separate cover, it's well known that Rav Shlomo Freifeld once told his daughter, the current Rebbetzin, I want you to know that my life with your mother, the Rebbetzin, was Gan Eden Hatachton. Gan Eden down in this world. But yet he had to go through a lot in order to see her. So sometimes it's just not the right timing. Again, one of the more remarkable episodes was with a family that moved to Muncie from another state, whereby with a daughter, and the husband in this family had passed away a number of years before. When the girl was relatively young, her father died. When she came of age, she started dating, and she met a very fine young man whom she liked, who was learning in Yeshiva Torah Vadas, and they got engaged. And after they were engaged shortly, she comes to her chassan and says, you know what? I really can't go through with this engagement. It has nothing to do with you, but I have some unresolved issues regarding myself and my feelings, probably related to the fact that my father died when I was young, and I just haven't gotten it together, and I feel terrible, and they broke up on excellent terms. She said, I'm not ready. And I don't know what she did, what work, kind of work she did, but a number of years, a year or two later, they moved to Muncie, and this girl started dating. And she went out for a year, and two, and three, several years, unsuccessfully. The mother brought the daughter to me. I met her, went out with a couple of guys from Arsameach. And now it was about, I'm guessing, 5 years, 4 years for sure, maybe five, after she had broken up her engagement. And then she had a thought. She said, you know, my old chassan is probably almost a grandfather by now. But you know, I really haven't kept up with him. Maybe we should find out where he is. And they discovered that he was still in Torah Vadas, doing something else part-time, and he never got engaged. So a shatran called him and said, would you be interested in going out with a young woman named so-and-so, who was once engaged to you? And he said, I'd be delighted to. And they got married. My wife taught the kala, and before the chasna came up, and I gave this chasna, a chasna shmos. And Baruch Hashem, they have a wonderful family. So sometimes people are not quite ready. It's not the right circumstances, or you see things in a different light. And then I'll tell you, when I came to Muncie, the very first time, it was a year before I moved here. Now we're going back about 36 years. And I stayed at the home of a classmate of mine. And a year later, I came again, and that classmate lived, his parents lived, half a block away from the yeshiva. And some of you may have been on a Muncie, historical tour of Muncie. I might have pointed out the Halberg house on the corner, diagonally across the street from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's home. And in fact, this past year, this Rabbi Eli Halberg was nifter, passed away. The year I came to the yeshiva, his wife, Mrs. Halberg, was nifter. And they had an oldest daughter, and then the two brothers, one, the middle one of which, the older of the two, who was my classmate. And I would often come there Friday night after the Suda, spend a little time, sing some Zmiras, share some Divrei Torah. And apparently, Rabbi Halberg was a very interesting man. And one of the things he was very famous for, he was the sweetest, booby type of a man, but he was very famous for his procrastination or his off-timing. He would always come late. And we made a Shalom Zachar, I think for our first son, and in winter time, and we closed shop at about 11 o'clock because no one else is coming, and at 12 o'clock Rabbi Halberg showed up. I'm here, you know. So we took everything out again and made a l'chaim and so on. And the story goes, and again I know this from the inside, that Rabbi Halberg was once on a Friday afternoon, he had his wife, daughter, and all his three children with him, and he's in the car, and in fact Rabbi Halberg, knowing himself, always kept some grape juice and a box of matzahs in his glove compartment, just in case. And they're coming from Washington Heights at the George Washington Bridge, and they're about to come back to Muncie, and his daughter says, Tati, it's 25 minutes before Shkia. We're not going to make it. I mean, seven minutes before candle lighting at the George Washington Bridge to come to Muncie for Shabbat. So he says, okay, I have plan B. I have my good friends, the Borchards, who live here in Washington Heights. Let's go to them. I'm sure they'll take us. And they zoom over to the Borchards, and 3 minutes before candle lighting, they knock on the door, whatever it is. And and the Borchards take them in. And what was extremely embarrassing is that there was a Bacher who was a guest for Shabbos, whose name was Yisrael, who had once dated this girl, Tzippi, and it didn't work. So the whole Shabbos, of course, this Yisrael didn't say a word to Tzippi, and they didn't look at each other, and very tzniastic, and had a great Shabbos. And Motzoi Shabbos, Rabbi Borchardt, goes over to Yisrael, and he says, this girl is a lovely girl, and I'd like to suggest a shidduch. So he said, we tried it already, it didn't work. So he says, well, what if the girl would say yes? Would you be willing to go out? He says, what? He says, what do you mean? She's a fantastic girl. So he twists his arm and he says, okay, he knows she's not going to say yes. If she says yes, I'll say, okay, I'll go out. Then he goes over to her. And he says, you know, this Bacher Yisrael is a gewaltig Bacher. I was very, very impressed with him. And would you be willing to go? She says, we tried that already. So he says, yeah, but maybe try again. She says, he wouldn't want. He says he's interested. He says, well, if he's interested, okay. What's right? He twists her arm and they go out. They go out and they get married. And Yisrael Blumenfeld is an internationally known man in the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael called Neve Tzion. He's known as, he's the mashgiach there, and he's known as the, anybody? The mash. They call him in the Beit Zion. He's known as the Mashiach, Yisrael Blumen. And that was now these are two people who went out and it didn't work. But somebody came in and was a catalyst to put it back together again. So sometimes we need to have a healthy skepticism about decisions we have made, and we should be open to rethinking, because after all is said and done, there's one bottom line. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. I wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos.